In the months before we moved to New York, Marla and I were doing some significant cleaning out at our house. Well, actually, it'd be more accurate to say that Marla was doing some serious cleaning out, and I was mostly being supportive and doing the occasional heavy lifting. It was the attic, the workshop, the garage, the kids' bedrooms, the china cabinet. We gave some of our possessions away. We sold a few. We sent more than a few others to the Habitat Restore or to the thrift shop. And I have to say, we were astonished at how much we had accumulated in 27 years in that house, especially given the fact that we're not really collectors. Those experiences in reducing clutter came back to mind when I re-encountered Luke's parable of the rich fool. And I laughed, albeit nervously, when I came across some old commentary on that parable by Lawrence Wood, who at the time was a Methodist pastor up in Michigan. He said, here in the rural upper Midwest, it seems that every other person has a pole barn. You'll have to look that up on Google if you don't know what it is, but it's essentially a structure on some poles that's got a roof on it open on the sides. Usually, he said, it's full of old tires, old brakes, a trailer, dozens of tools gathering rust, coffee cans loaded with lug nuts and screws. But then nobody, almost nobody in America lives like desert monks anyway. Ed and Edna's place is pretty typical, I think. Her cupboards, her bureaus, her cabinets, garage, attic, spare bedroom have been crammed full of things that define her. Oh, you know Edna Furbelow, her neighbor says. She collected Hummels. Every so often, Edna took some of the clutter out into the front yard and sold it, though no one stepping inside the house ever knew the difference. Now that Edna has died and her husband's pole barn has finally gotten emptied, everything must go. Wood says it's too bad she's not here for the lesson, because there's something morally instructive about an estate sale. Absent the owners, the things lose their meaning, so that even Ed and Edna's kids and closest friends think, goodness, what a lot of junk. The agent, who doesn't want to haul it away, has priced everything low. Books go for 50 cents, a big set of plates for a few bucks. Here's an old rusty bicycle from the Eisenhower era and a once prized lamp that now seems, well, hideous. Set out on the green grass outside the barn, Ed's bandsaw and drill press, his pride and joy appear headed for retirement. And now the auctioneer calls out Lot 152, a collection of 400 Hummel figurines. Eyes roll and knowing smiles break out, but no one bids, no one. The auctioneer looks at the estate agent. The agent looks at Edna's oldest daughter. A lifetime's hobby and a person's identity have come to this. It's almost possible, Wood says, to hear Jesus asking, and all these Hummels, whose will they be? Now, Edna Furbelow affords us only a glimpse into the point that Jesus drives home in his parable of the rich fool. Her collection of humble figurines was nothing compared to the huge grain elevators the rich fool needed to store his accumulated wealth. But it does somehow bring us back to the stuff of our own lives, all that we have accumulated across the years, and the attachments that go with such stuff. If you see this as a pitch for the contributions to the upcoming yard sale, then good, but that's not my point today. The late comedian George Carlin used to draw a lot of laughs talking about all our accumulated stuff. That's all your house is, said Carlin, a place to keep your stuff. If you didn't have so much stuff, you wouldn't need a house or apartment. You could just walk around all the time. The house is just a pile of stuff with a cover on it, and when you leave your house, you've got to lock it up. You wouldn't want somebody to come by and take some of your stuff. That's what the house is, a place to keep your stuff while you go out and get more stuff. Sometimes you've got to move, got to get a bigger house or apartment. Why? You've got to make room for that stuff. We laughed at Carlin because his caricature struck a resonant chord in our experience. We knew he was right. He was, if exaggerating, and that's what made his routine funny. But deep down, given Jesus' words of warnings, we know it's no laughing matter. Our homes and apartments, even the more modest ones, contain a myriad stewardship lessons. What we buy and what we store, what we keep and what we share, are glimpses into the truth about each of us. When placed next to the poor of the world, who among us is not rich? At its heart, Jesus' parable of the rich fool is a warning against idolatry. Luke Timothy Johnson, biblical scholar, says, "Idolatry, in simple terms, is the choice of treating as ultimate and absolute that which is neither absolute nor ultimate. Functionally, my God is that which I serve by my freedom. Our freedom is not found in scattered outbursts of random activity, but in the shaping of a direction and a pattern in life. Even if it's hard to discern, there's a pattern to our lives which manifests itself in many small choices we make moment by moment and day by day. It's not that wealth and possessions are intrinsically evil. They are not. They aren't the problem. The problem is in the mind or the heart that makes such things into gods. And that happens more subtly than we may think. Consider the pattern of your days, of your needs and your wants, of your habits and your passions, of your bank statement and your investment portfolios and your credit card receipts. Consider the ways such patterns mesh or conflict with Christ's call to travel lightly and simply, to share in the abundant from the abundance we've received, and to put the claims of God first in priority. Be on guard against all kinds of greed, Jesus said, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of one's possessions. Well, of course, that's right. We know he's right. We do. And we could live without our stuff. We could. We could share more than we do. We could. But let's be honest, there's a certain comfort and security in the stuff, in the wealth that we've accumulated. It gives us certain capacities and affords certain opportunities we would not have otherwise. It's true. But sometimes the security we think wealth provides is mostly an illusion, especially when a significant crisis comes. Our wealth, as our mutual friend John Walton once said, cannot solve some of our most important problems in such times. Wealth can buy you a good oncologist, but it cannot buy one moment of time to extend a life when that life is over. It can get you a good psychiatrist, but it cannot buy sanity or peace of mind. It may attract some hangers-on or some companions of sorts, but it cannot buy trust or love or lasting friendship. It can buy you the best of educations, but it cannot confer wisdom. Possessions are, for all we trust them, passing things of temporal and not eternal worth. And that's what the man with the barns missed. He didn't understand how time works, that there are transitory and eternal things. The problem is that we're all the time confusing one with the other. To know the eternal things and to live into them, I believe, is what it means to be rich toward God. To live lives consumed by transitory things may be satisfying for a season, but in the end, it leaves us spiritually impoverished, adrift from our moorings, apart from the purposes and relationships that give life meaning. That's why God calls the rich man a fool. "You fool," he says. A few weeks ago, following the funeral of a dear friend at the church I served for 26 years, I stepped into the church's memorial garden. I used to do so periodically because it was, for me, a place of memory and deep gratitude. I studied some of the plants, astonished at how much some of them had grown, but mostly I spent my time looking at the names inscribed on the granite wall. So many people I had known and loved across the years. I thought about them one by one. So many remarkable people. There were the extroverts and the introverts, the upfront leaders and the quiet servants. There were the elderly and the very young, those who died suddenly, tragically, and those whose deaths were long and labored. Of the latter, I remember watching more than a few of them come to terms with the fact that all their striving and all their acquisitiveness, even all their best efforts, ultimately had to be relinquished and entrusted to someone else. Ultimately, and it happened sooner for some than for others, their whole lives had to be handed back to God. As I stood in that sacred space, thought about all those dear ones, I reckon that many of them in the end likely came to understand that the only things that would finally matter after they were gone were the good that they had made possible along the way and their investment of time and energy in those they loved and those they served. I remembered too that those who seemed to have found the greatest contentment in the face of life's final mystery were those who had counted their lives as full of richness, who had lived their lives as stewards of the gift entrusted to them with gladness and with joy. Our concluding hymn today is from Harry Emerson Fosdick's beloved hymn, "God of Grace and God of Glory." I do love that hymn, but I do confess also that one of its verses has always unsettled me. It's the one that says, "Shame our wanton selfish gladness, rich in things and poor in soul. Grant us wisdom, grant us courage, lest we miss thy kingdom's goal." There are, I believe, at least two ways to be rich in this world. One is to be rich in things, to acquire a lot of stuff, a good bit of wealth and many possessions. And the other is to cultivate few needs and then to discover that all those needs have been met. What are those needs? Well, food, water, of course, but what else? I think for me, what I need for my life to be full is the company of those I love, a good bit of laughter and music and kindness and daily hints and reminders of God's beautiful and abundant grace. And in that sense of the word, friends, I would confess that I'm a very rich man indeed. What about you? What do you need for your life to be full? In what way will you be rich?